adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario! All right, welcome to Rate This Way, a calcio podcast that brings the latest and greatest news from the world of Serie A and European soccer. My name is Michael D'Angelo. With us, as always, we have Il Grillo, Paolino Bologna Mangoni.
Welcome back, everyone.
And we have, of course, Mr. Chris Baselli.
Hello, everybody.
And Julian Padu D'Angelo.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Il Grillo e la Formica.
Yes.
Paolo, do you want to enlighten the listeners here?
I don't know. I just wanted some folk music, you know, something upbeat, cheery, and something, you know, to get a hoe down, you know? La Formica, dal grande dolore, prese una zampina e se la mise al cuore.
This specific band is called Tequila, and Tequila e Montepulciano band.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yes, yeah. So it's a nice Abruzzese folk music.
Bravo. All right, welcome to the show. I'm sorry about that, but there's nothing I can do. It's too late. You had to listen to Il Grillo e la Formica. We have quite a slate of games to get through here. So what we're going to do today is we're going to go through the previous match day. So what was that? Match day 8? 9?
9.
Match day 9. And then we will, of course, get into a review of last week's European games. And we will have a set of games to kind of set up as we have some midweek soccer again. But it's Serie A this time and not European soccer. So again, it's going to be a very busy week. But again, we're just excited to have that in front of us.
We'll be prepared for it, right, Michael?
Right. Yes. Of course. How do you prepare for that?
Well, by the sense that we'll bring what games that we'll be watching for from round 10 and 11.
We will pop popcorn at what times?
12:30 and 2:45 midweek.
Bravo.
And then be aware, I think Julian mentioned that daylight standard savings time. Daylight saving times happen this weekend. So Europe.
In Europe, though.
Europe moves first. Okay.
We're the 7th, I think.
Okay.
We still have 2 weeks.
For North America, the European game start an hour later.
Right.
Which is better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But only for a week.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anyways, let's get into week 9 before we get ahead of ourselves here. So what we'll do again is we'll pound through those. So Friday actually had 2 games. We had Torino Genoa, which is a very good game. Torino obviously looking to I believe it's 2 in a row they were looking for because they won the – or no, they lost 2 in a row. So they're looking to finally get a point after losing to Napoli the week prior and, again, Juventus in that Derby della Mola before that, which they actually do get to a good start. And Saldi with a beautiful cross to find Sanabria, who heads it home, across the goal, makes a 1-0 Torino. And then a nice passing break as Brekalo finds Sanabria, who slips it through to Pobega on the left side. And suddenly Torino are up 2-0 after about 30 minutes. And Destro has a flying chance in the first half, but Genoa can't really find the back of the net until the 69th minute. Nice. When Destro, again, breaks through and slots it home to make it 2-1. Pret turns his marker on the right wing, runs up before powering it into Brekalo, who was the man, kind of, there was 3 in the box. He happened to be the one to kind of finish it off. And Torino get their 3-1 goal before Caicedo scores to make it 3-2. late in the game, and Rovella nearly makes it 3-3 on our free kick late in the game as well, but in the end, it's not enough for Genoa, who fall by the 3-2 scoreline. Paulo, any notes on this game?
I really enjoyed how Genoa, you know, made a comeback. They didn't allow themselves to get beat out of the game. You know, by the first half, it seemed to be all Torino, but again, give credit to Genoa for attempting a comeback.
Yeah, and again, credit to Destro's having himself a season so far. Again, we've talked about it a lot, but he's currently, with that goal, he was it was his sixth goal of the season so far, and puts him right now tied for third in the Capo race, just two behind the leader Immobile.
So, quick fact, I was checking out the Golden Boot race for Europe, and he's in the top 50.
Ah, so he's also, I believe, first with headers. Is that true?
Yeah. So he has the most goals in the in Europe's top five leagues for headed goals.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's more impressive than, I mean, top 50
is okay.
Come on. Yeah. Where are we drawing the line here? But no, leading Europe or the top five leagues in goals scored with his head, I think that's more notable.
Yeah, well, I mean, more goals than Haaland with his head, you know, which is impressive just in that of itself.
So yeah, more goals than Destro's Christian. Better than Haaland?
Yes, he did. Run that back. Really good.
Destro Pella Nazionale, right?
Moving on here. We had Samp playing Spezia. Samp ends up taking it 2-1. Gassi with an own goal in the 15th minute. Kondreva scores to make it 2-0, 36 minutes in. And then we have on Friday, this is like, it seems to be a pattern where the early games, this is the second game of the match day. I think last week it was the same thing. We had like our goal of the weekend, like very quick. But again, this is the goal of the week. Daniele Verde makes it 2-1. Not enough for Spezia, but at least again a nice goal nonetheless. Here's the audio.
Verde, it's a good turn by Bastoni. Sliding challenge though from Ferrari. There's Verde. Oh, that's cannon into the corner. Spezia have a very late goal. That is stunning from Daniele Verde.
Stunning indeed. Who wants to kind of give a little bit more of a description to that?
So I was watching that game. So mm-hmm. It was Verde off the wing. Shot out of nowhere. I thought he was going to cross it in. And just sneaks top corner near post. He didn't fool the commentator. It looked like the ball actually went on the other side of the post. But you know, he scored a very, very nice goal. And it also caught me off guard. I thought it went wide as well, but it was an outstanding shot and fooled everyone. Just a couple of notes on the game. Mm-hmm. Sampdoria could have been up 3-0 in this game early in the first half. But again, Spezia in the second half kind of took possession back and forced himself back into the game, but it just wasn't enough.
Yeah, and at the end there, it's a 90th basically minute consolation something. Yeah,
it was literally the last kick of the game.
There you go. So it's again, it was a very nice goal though, a cannon shot.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. So that was Friday's games. Next up on Saturday, we had Salernitana hosting Empoli, and Empoli take this 4-2. Pinamonti with a brace. Cutrone scored to make it 2-0, 11 minutes in, Strandberg with an own goal. So after 13 minutes, it was already 3-0 for Empoli. And then, in the second half, Salernitana get two back, Ranieri and, an own goal by Ismaili. So again, 4-2 for Empoli. Next up, we had Sassuolo Venezia. Okereke actually made it 1-0 Venezia 32 minutes in before Berardi scores to tie it about 5 minutes later. Then an own goal in the second half by Henri makes it 2-1 for Sassuolo before Fratesi makes it 3-1, 66 minutes in. All right, next game. This is another weird game, I'll say. Chris, Bologna, AC Milan.
No, pretty standard, Mike. So just a refresher from last week for Milan. Anyways, they went down 2-0 to Verona in the first half, and then as we know, they were able to fight their way back. So you're hoping for a different start this week, and they definitely got that. Leao, who in my opinion is probably, you know, Milan's MVP of the season so far, he gets played in, and I believe it deflected off Medel.
Yes.
Deflected off Medel and went in. So difficult, difficult goal to concede for Bologna, but good early start there for Milan. And then it was in the 20th minute, Simon Kjær, who's not really known for his passing, his long range passing ability. Anyways, he plays an incredible ball in behind, and Adama Suamaro takes down the Milan attacker. So that's the first red card of the game for Bologna. So 11-10 at that point. Davide Calabria hit a ball first time off a rebound to make it 2-0. So Milan goes into the break 2-0 up. You're pretty confident at that point, 2-0 up, a man up. But nope, typical Milan, they have to make it interesting. So 49th minute, corner kick for Bologna. Ibrahimovic, who's usually pretty reliable in the air, he makes an attempt like he's about to go and clear the header. And then I don't know if Tata Rusanu called him off or if somebody else said something, but he ducks at the last second, but it still deflects off his head and into the net. So that makes it 2-1. And then you could tell Bologna were kind of energized from that. And then 3 minutes later, Musa Bado's played in, but I do have to compliment Soriano on the pass because he had pressure on him, and the Milan center backs were also close to Musa Bado, and Soriano was able to play it in behind where only Bado could get to it. He finishes it. So 2-2. But then 58th minute, Soriano also gets a red. His studs come down on Torre down in the corner. And then 84th minute, Bennacer with a great finish. I definitely wouldn't argue that it was better than Verde's goal for goal of the week, but if we had a top three, it would definitely be in there. And then 90th minute, Ibrahimovic puts another one away to make it 4-2. And that was the final for Milan.
Two red cards,
yes.
Okay, maybe the second one. Okay, I understand it was studs, but again, was it, I can't remember who was it. Was it Bakayoko who did that?
From a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was literally the play.
It was almost the same play, and then, you know, Bakayoko gets a yellow card, and, you know, Soriano goes to VAR and gets sent off. So again, it's suspicious. I mean,
they're not the same play though.
What do you mean they're not the same play?
They're not the same play.
Julian, we'll get to that later.
Julian's making notes.
Soriano completely missed the ball. And I don't even know if he was making a play on the ball. He was almost just kind of stretching out to block it. Whereas if the one you're referring to with Bakayoko, I feel like it was against Lazio, maybe?
Yeah.
Anyways, that was where he was the closest one to the ball. And at the last second, Chedby or whoever it was nicked it from under him, and he was already bringing his foot down. Like, no human could react quickly enough to stop that. So, like I said, a yellow in Bakayoko's case with regards to the Lazio game, but it's a red card for Soriano. I would agree that the red card for Suamaro, he didn't really yank Krunic down to the ground, but again, but I think because it was last man and the referee deems it was a potential breakaway, that's what he's looking at.
Listen, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, he was the last man. But again, it was. I'm just trying to bring up a point of contention here, in the sense that, you know, maybe a yellow would have been sufficient for Soriano at that point, considering of some of the other calls that were given yellow cards, like I brought up Bakayoko.
If you apologize to Dumfries, I'll get the red card rescinded.
Yeah, Paulo, what are you doing here?
No, but I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Again, we'll get to that later. Okay, we'll get to that later.
I'm just trying to get your blood boiling.
Hey, yeah, I can tell. Michael, before we jump, I just wanted to go back to the Salernitana game. Something hilarious happened.
Oh my God, that was 2 games ago, Paulo.
But just wait, it was pretty funny. So Pinamonti scored a chipped penalty. So he chipped.
Yes,
and then Bellic chased him. So yeah, I just wanted to get that
It's like some FIFA street stuff there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So it was hilarious. So it was up 4-0, and he chased them because he embarrassed them. Anyway, go on, Michael.
Okay, well, if we have nothing else to say about Milan, I'll say this. It took two red cards to beat Bologna because they couldn't score for a half hour after that second yellow card or second red card as well.
They're just trying to keep people watching the game for as long as possible.
That's right, yes. Smart. Smart by them. It's marketing. All right, moving on here. Sunday's games. So Atalanta hosted Udinese, and it ends in a 1-1 draw. Malinovsky in the 56th is canceled out by Beto late in the game, 90th. And again, it ends 1-1. Next up, we had Fiorentina-Cagliari. Fiorentina take it to Cagliari. They win 3-0. Biraghi with a PK 21 minutes in. And then Gonzalez and Vlahovic score in the 42nd, 49th. And for that PK, there was people talking, oh, why didn't Vlahovic take it? And, you know, apparently they just talked, and he said he wasn't feeling it, so they gave it to the captain.
Yeah, and he scored an absolutely filthy free kick in the 49th minute. So he got his goal in the end. So
there you go. Made up for it. So again, Fiorentina 3-0 winners over Cagliari. Next up, we had Verona-Lazio. And Verona, well, actually, specifically Simeone took it to Lazio in this game. It ends 4-1, four goals from Simeone. Immobile with one goal to make it 2-1 after I think the half started. But again, Simeone was too powerful for Verona over Lazio, and that's the way it ends. Julian, you had a note about this game too?
Yeah, just both of Lazio's first-choice center-backs were suspended, so they had to play. I think it was Patrick and Radu as their two center-backs. And from the highlights I saw, there were 2 to 3 goals where I think it was Caprari passed it right between the two of them for Simeone to run onto.
Now, is this those two same center-backs you told the goalie to throw the ball out against Inter last week?
One of them would have been. Yeah.
Another point, Michael. So actually, Lazio will be holding a punitive retreat at their training ground until their next game because of their poor performance against Hellas Verona, well, against Simeone specifically. and also, I believe they stayed in the locker room for an hour after the game. It's like someone was giving them a dressing down. So interesting to see the fallout from that.
There we go. I guess we should note there with those four goals, Simeone jumps up to a tie with Destro for the third place there. And again, Immobile's goal puts him squarely in front of the Capo race. Next up, we had Roma-Napoli.
Okay, so this was a cagey game, but yet still entertaining, though. So Zaniolo had the first best chance of the game as he headed it wide of the post off a corner. Cristante, later on in the half, wins the ball back in the Napoli half and plays through Abraham, who placed it just wide of the post. So again, that was probably Roma's best chance of the game. And Tammy most likely would have scored it if he didn't pick up a knock minutes before. Later on in the half, Insigne flashes his Tita Gier high and wide. In the second half, Fabian Ruiz played in Politano, who played the ball across for Osimhen, who hit the post with his effort. Osimhen had another header that hit the crossbar. Mancini later on in the game headed a free kick wide of the post. At the end of the game, or close to the end of the game, Mourinho was sent off for excessive protest. And then after the whistle, Spalletti was sent off for applauding the referee.
But
yeah.
Actually applauding the referee, not mimicking the referee.
Well, it looks like it was sarcastic, but I don't know. I've seen people read it both ways.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if both managers were being sarcastic as well at the end of the game, because I think Mourinho said Massa had a good game. So, and then, yeah, go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, look, I want to be the half glass full guy too, but like, what manager ever seriously claps for the referees? like think about it. Like, they might say something nice in the post game conference, press conference. I've seen that, but I have never in my life seen like a serious congratulatory clap from a manager to a referee after a game. I haven't seen it. So, it's
but you sarcastic. have seen money going into his pockets from Galliani.
From who? Agnelli. Okay. Oh, yeah, but before I forget, Netflix, it's called Bad Sport. There's an episode there on Calciopoli. Go watch it.
Okay, we're getting off topic here, but I just want to finish that. They obviously didn't talk about Inter and their part in it. But anyway, before I get off topic, I just want to go back to the actual game. Again, Massa, he has a history of being very sensitive. Because I think he also sent off Insigne as well last season for something similar. So again, these Italian referees, they don't like to have their authority challenged. And when they do, they overreact. They don't, you know, actually talk to them, calm them down. They just sent them off. And again, that for me, that ruins the game. It's just by having someone so sensitive like that and having their feelings hurt because of sarcasm or because they can't take the heat, then they should not be in that profession of refereeing a professional game. So yeah, that's my take.
I hear that, but I feel like that's probably like pretty prevalent everywhere. Like, I feel like referees in general have this problem. Is that
sure? But I always look at the gold standard of refereeing, which is Pierluigi Collina. I remember, like, if you go watch highlights of him, players would yell at his face. He would sit there, take it, and then he would calm him down and flash yellow, and that's it.
I thought you were going to say Michael Oliver.
Well, the guy who rides the carpet. I was about to say, before Julie interrupted, the guy who has a garbage can for his heart?
Yes, the guy who should be eating crisps in the stand with his family.
Okay, Michael, we're having too much fun with this.
Yeah, for a 0-0 game. Okay, moving on here. Yeah. What happened with the last game is Inter and Juventus. Giuliano.
The Derby d'Italia. Honestly, it was kind of a boring game overall. Inter took the lead early on. Now, the play leading up to that, Bernardeschi was going in one-on-one with Darmian, I believe it was, and he just kind of went to the ground grabbing his shoulder and seemed to be in quite a bit of pain.
Did Inter kick the ball out?
The ball rolled out, actually. So, yeah. play was stopped.
Hold on, Julian. So, after he instead of asked for a sub and then came off the field and then said, 1 minute, let me go try it out. But go ahead, Julian, continue.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. So yes, he did ask for 1 minute. In that 1 minute, Inter took advantage of being a man up. Ball gets played to Calhanoglu, who was about to send a shot into the third tier of stands. But it takes a nice lucky deflection off of Locatelli off the post, bounced right to Dzeko, who had a wide open net to score, make it 1-0. From that point on, Juve had a kind of a chance off a free kick, I think, with Cuadrado who took it. Handanovic saw it late, managed to save it, rebound as per usual, put right back into the middle of the box, but the Inter center backs were able to clear. Before the end of the half, I'll actually give Calhanoglu credit for this one. Brozovic made a late run kind of between, I think it was Benucci and Danilo, the right back. And then it freed up a little bit of space for Dzeko. Calhanoglu pinged the ball to Dzeko, who was wide open, had the choice to either take it down and shoot or take it down and lay it up to Brozovic. Instead, he tried to do a one-touch layup to Brozovic and lightly headed it right towards Sir Chesney. So that was a big opportunity miss, in my opinion, because they could have went up 2-0 on that one. Second half, again, Juve's only other threat came from a free kick. Dybala tried to beat Handanovic near post. Again, Handanovic palmed the ball right back out into the middle of the box, which Inter center backs were able to clear yet again. 70th minute, give or take, Perisic wins the ball from Cuadrado, goes on a nice run, cuts inside, and then completely misses his shot wide. So Inter, in my opinion, had the better chances in this game. They definitely should have finished one of those chances.
So
here's where it gets... Sorry.
Okay, so yeah, no. Before we get to that part, So Morata had a chance. Was it the? I don't know if you mentioned it that Morata shot it, and then it was kind of fumbled by Hernandez before Alexandre got there.
Okay, that was Morata. I thought it was Cuadrado who shot it.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Perisic gets yellow card 74th minute, and Zaghi decides to take him off for Denzel Dumfries, which I don't understand, quite frankly, because I thought Perisic was one of Inter's better players on the pitch. And I also don't understand why you're bringing on a right wing back, because then you make Darmian switch over to the left side, which he's played 75 minutes on the right side. If you decide to sub him, just throw DeMarco on, who is more defensive than Dumfries. Anyways, I'll get into that after. But, of course, the Derby d'Italia wouldn't be the Derby d'Italia without some controversy. 89th minute, Sandro kind of touches the ball near the top of the box. Doesn't really go anywhere. Inter kind of break the other way. Barella goes down with cramps. Random VAR review for a penalty. Decided to go take a look. There's slight contact from Dumfries on Sandro, who, again, lost the ball, which led to nothing. Ref awards a penalty. Dybala scored said penalty, 1-1. That's your final score. Now, again, my complaint is not necessarily that it wasn't a penalty. There is contact. I can understand why it was called. It's more the consistency that we've seen throughout the season. These have been ignored throughout the season. We've heard from the VAR referees say if the ref sees it clearly and makes a decision, VAR should not intervene. And the ref saw it and waved play on. We had Calvarese last Derby d'Italia who said he clearly saw Cuadrado step on Perisic and fall over and didn't go to VAR and still awarded Juve a penalty. That's my conspiracy theory in him. Anyways, it's up for debate.
Okay, so I think today Rizzoli came out and said that the refs did a great job on Sunday.
Sorry, just to interrupt, which is hilarious because four managers were sent off. So clearly they did not do a good job.
Yeah, well. Again, that's you know, the level of refereeing in Italy this season. But again, it all stems, Julian, so you talked about consistency. It all stemmed from the fact that Rizzoli, before the start of the season, stated that he didn't want VAR to be the final decision maker, even though this happened in this game. And then he didn't acknowledge that happened in this game. So instead of, you know, saying one thing and then when it actually does happen and saying another thing, what they should have done this season said, listen, we're going to have VAR look at any potential penalty or dangerous play, something that the ref missed, and we're going to tell the ref, listen, there's this play, go look at it, you make the final decision, and we'll live with it. No, they said that, well, the referee on the field has to make the final decision. Well, that's what happens, okay, when you allow the ref to make the final decision. Instead of going to the screen and saying, okay, think about it again. Do you still agree with the decision that you gave? Yes or no? If it's yes, move on. But again, like I said, They shot themselves in the foot from the start of the season, and here we are, not even 10 games into the season.
Yeah.
So
I want to add that, I like your point there, because it's almost like, what do they do in football, Julian? They do something like, if on all scoring plays or something, right? It's always reviewed or something like that?
Yeah, every single scoring play is reviewed. And, I mean, the last 2 minutes of each half is completely up to the booth to review everything.
Right.
Which, I mean, there's no coaches challenge in soccer yet. I wouldn't be surprised if that comes eventually, but yeah.
Yeah. I understand the call for consistency 100%, but let's be real. We talked about this before, Julian, you and I. If the shoe was on the other foot and Juve were up 1-0 and that happened to Inter, what would you do?
Oh, 100%. I'd be screaming for
so, Bentley. So legitimately just let it go. You guys just, it's sour grapes. It's, that's all this is. It's all this is people just complaining because, you know, they like to complain. And that's Inter's MO.
Well, it's anti-Juve MO, but yeah.
Yeah.
No, and like I do agree Inter had the chance to win it. They didn't. Again, I think Inzaghi fucked up his subs. Gagliardini brings nothing to any game he ever comes on. I don't know what coach has seen him. Inzaghi, Conte, Spalletti, they all played him. He's not good offensively. He's slow as a turtle defensively. Like, it makes no sense. No sense. I mentioned already the Perisic coming off. If you wanted, like, we know Dumfries isn't great defensively. Throw DeMarco on left wing back. Mm-hmm. You're good. But,
yeah. Well, so if we want to talk about subs, I mean, Allegri threw on Chiesa and Dybala with, you know, 25 minutes left in the game. And that obviously, you know, obviously made an impact. Dybala essentially created, you know, two of the three best chances for Juventus. So again, imagine if Dybala was healthy enough to start the game. This would have been a completely different game. You know.
Yeah. Dybala also of note makes recent Juve history here again. He scored in three, I believe. Derbies in a row, something like that, three or four in a row, which hasn't done in a while. So there you have it. Dybala is king.
My other sub, I just want to quickly mention. I've mentioned it before on the show, and I don't understand why Dzeko consistently plays 90 minutes. He's a good player, but as soon as you pull off Lautaro, you lose any attacking threat.
Oh.
You have no speed, and you have no pressure on the opposing team.
Okay, defense. So- Just a note on Lautaro. He didn't do anything all game. He was in this whole game.
No, but I think he also, his role was to be more defensive. Inter's press, kind of, they wanted to keep Bonucci from playing the ball out.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one who was kind of man-marking Bonucci. So that's why if you watch in the first half, it was, play was kind of running through Chiellini at the back.
Speaking about Bonucci, anyway, that's another topic that I want to go into. Anyway, Michael, back to you.
Okay, well, that kind of wraps up our table here, or sorry, our slate of games. Now to look at the table, we have, again, Napoli drew, which leaves them at 25 points. And with the win, Milan tie Napoli for first place, although their difference in, I think... goal differential is, I think, three in Napoli's favor. So Napoli are technically still first. But again, Milan draw even there. So they're still leading. Inter are still in third with their draw. And Roma fourth. Whereas Atalanta, Juve, and now Fiorentina are tied after that with 15 points each. So it's the table is starting to get really muddy here. But again, it's looking favorable for Milan and Napoli.
So just a quick... fun fact. I know, Paolo, you were sending me a few tweets of people who are already calling for Inzaghi out. This point of the season last year, after 9 match days, Inter had 18 points and Milan had 25 points.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, the season doesn't start until after 10 games. Allegri's right.
Paolo. Oh, boy. All right. Okay. Quickly, do we want to just preview what we have? Because I guess we're going to have two match days technically to review in our next episode here. So just quickly, what do we want to do about, I guess, the next two match days? Do you want to preview them, Paulo?
Okay. Yeah, sure. So games that I'm looking for, you know, Tuesday, there's going to be Spezia Genoa. And then Milan-Torino.
That'll be a good game.
Yep. Wednesday, there's Juve-Sassuolo, Samp-Atalanta, Cagliari-Roma, Empoli-Inter, and then Lazio-Fiorentina. And then Thursday, there's Napoli-Bologna. Again, for Tuesday, obviously the good game is Milan-Torino, and I think Torino will give... Milan more bigger run for their money than Bologna. I think Juric has proved that he has that Torino side more organized than last season. And I think they're not as sloppy as Bologna. I know I caught a bit of the Milan game against Bologna, and Bologna gave away possession very cheaply, which led to Milan's chances to score. So I don't think we're going to see that from Torino. I hope I don't jinx it, but I think Milan's going to find getting possession harder than they did against Bologna.
Yeah. Okay. And then looking ahead to the weekend, again, it's going to be match day 11, and some games to look forward to on Saturday. We have Atalanta-Lazio. We have on Sunday Roma and Milan. And those are kind of the key matchups. But again, it's going to be a very, very interesting week. So we have soccer Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, no Friday, but we have Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah. Also, historically, Juventus do struggle against Hellas, so that's going to be a game to watch.
Yeah, also on Saturday, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, well, then that's that. Why don't we...
One more point before we go to break.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, Milan's next two games, Torino, and then away to Roma.
Two?
So I kind of want to get the Milan perspective from Mr. Chris.
I thought you made a good point about Torino in my head. Yes. You made a good point about Torino with them being led by Juric. So definitely going to be the most difficult of their last three Serie A matches, dating back to Bologna and Verona before that. And then it just depends which version of Roma we see. Obviously we know their Conference League result, and we know, you know, the lineup that was fielded, so that'll be a good game for sure. It could go either way, in my opinion.
Yeah, and if we're talking form at the moment, I feel like Milan probably is in more form than Roma are, because they've they've been having, especially this past week and a half, it's been a struggle for them.
That's what happens when you have 14 good players on in the squad. So.
Okay, well, with that, why don't we let that fester in the hearts of Milan or Roma fans, rather. We'll take a quick break here. But when we come back, we will get into a little bit of a European review. Plus, we have the Chris's favorite segment coming up. So again, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the show. I just needed Oli Oli Ola to drop there. Oh, God. Okay.
See, we love our folk music, Michael. What do you want?
We're just creatures of habit here, yeah. Listening to our roots. God damn it. Oh, boy. Okay, let's get into the second half here. So we have, of course, the European games to review. So we will do that. We will do that first. So why don't we get into it? Why don't we do first up last week, I believe on the Tuesday, it was AC Milan against Porto.
It was. I don't want to breeze through it just because it wasn't a favorable result for Milan, but it was certainly disappointing to see them get outplayed the way they did. Looking at the possession stats now, I'm surprised at how close it was at the end of the game. It was 53 percent to 47% in favor of Porto. I definitely would have expected that to be higher in Porto's favor. 20 shots for Porto, only two were on target, but I think the 20 shots for Porto to Milan's four really tells the story of how the game went. I think in the first 15-20 minutes, Chiar and Tomori each had two, maybe three blocked shots, and not just, you know, long shots from, you know, 20 yards out, like shots from just inside the 18 that if they don't get blocked, they're probably going in. So, I mean, good on them for, you know, being brave and blocking those shots, but you don't want to have to be defending that desperately so early in the game. So, there's no debating that Porto were the better team from start to finish. At no point did I feel like Milan were really in the game. I know Milan have some injuries right now and you have to rotate the squad, but I'm going back to last year. Krunic does not belong at this level. I think if he's a squad player that plays against, you know, the newly promoted teams in the bottom five, great, but nothing more than that. And so, of course, I'm not blaming the loss on him, but it does hurt your chances of winning when a player of a lower quality is on the pitch against a side like Porto who at home are pretty devastating. So it finished 1-0 Porto. Milan are 0-3. You know, at this point, obviously top two is kind of out of the picture. Maybe they can sneak some points in and finish third. I'd rather, you know, they kind of follow Inter's footsteps and, you know, you come out of the Champions League a bit early and then you get to focus on Serie A. So, yeah, not much to be positive about. I'm trying to be, but there's nothing for me to grasp at here.
Let me tell you what you did a really good job at, though, Chris. You took a lot of the sting out of what Paulo and I would have said. So kudos to you.
Good. Paulo will still say something, though.
Yes.
I know.
Paulo, go ahead.
Oh, what was it? No, it's just because, yeah, I love all the tifo at the start of the group stage saying AC Milan is back, and it's like, yeah, AC Milan is back, and it's like 0-3. It's like that team does not belong in the Champions League.
Okay. Well, they belong in the Champions League. Again, they had Liverpool and should have beat Atletico Madrid. So you can't say they don't belong in Champions League. Obviously, when you're 0-3, that doesn't look good. But
you're starting Krunic.
But that's not an ideal. Like I said before, they're ravaged with injuries and they've had to rotate the squad, and that's a result of that. Obviously. And I said it, he's not the quality you need to have, but that's just where they're at right now.
Yeah, well, but that goes back to my point from the previous episode. It's only a matter of time where those injuries start to catch up to Milan. It's catching up to Milan in Europe, and it's only a matter of time that'll catch up to Milan in Serie A. So that's the point I wanted to make.
Speriamo. So, I mean, I'll say this though for Milan. I mean, they were in a tough group, obviously. Liverpool, Atletico Madrid, Porto, those are all very good teams. So, I mean, is this what I would have expected? I mean, yeah, but I wouldn't have expected it to be as close in each game, right? So, they're only one goal losses, I believe, in all games, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
So yep. It's again, it's that's a positive you take away if you're Milan. But again, like you said, that they're going to take a page out of Inter's book and crash out of Europe, it looks like. Speaking of Inter, there was the next Italian team on Tuesday. So Inter played Sheriff.
So Inter are the first team to beat Sheriff Tiraspol in Europe.
Shit.
Well, I shouldn't say in Europe. I should say in Champions League knockout stages. But yeah, it was honestly, this was a must-win game for them. So it was nice to see them come out and quite frankly dominate the game. Open the scoring early on through Dzeko off of a corner, which was flicked on by Vidal. Now, Sheriff did actually make it a little interesting. They tied the game up 1-1 through... it was a pretty nice free kick. Handanovic probably should have reacted a little bit sooner on it. But again, that's nothing new. Inter, however, were able to grab the lead back through Vidal, assisted by Dzeko this time. So they kind of swapped one up and scored one. Yeah. And then late in the game, De Vrij scored to make it 3-1, assisted by Denzel Dumfries. So Inter now have 4 points in the group, currently sitting in third. Sharif are still first on tiebreaker, I believe, tied with Madrid at 6 points, Inter at 4, Shakhtar at 1.
Yeah, Sharif have the tiebreaker because they beat Madrid.
Yeah, the head-to-head.
Yeah.
So yeah, they have to now go into Moldova to play their next game. But again, that's still, in my opinion, a must-win game.
Yeah, for sure. Am I right? Paulo, anything? Chris, anything?
Well, I mean, we'll see. We'll see 2 weeks from now. I mean, that win sets up Inter for the rest of the group. You know, to go to Moldova, get a win, well, they're back in contention to finish in the top two, and which is what their objective is for this season after, you know, disappointing campaigns in the Champions League for the past two seasons.
Very astutely put, Paulo. Yeah, very astute. There you go. See, we're on the same page. Okay, moving on. We'll go into the Wednesday games here. So we had a really interesting matchup in Manchester United and Atalanta.
Yeah, so definitely, I thought when the group was picked that it would have been between, you know, the two of them to see who would come out on top. Fantastic start for Atalanta, you know, playing at Old Trafford. There was a 15th minute goal, from Mario Pasalic, and that was followed up just over 10 minutes later from Mary Demiral to make it 2-0. Now, I don't have the minute here, but Demiral would eventually go off injured. And I don't want to say Atalanta broke down because he went off, but the timing of it, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence. He's ideally, you know, Atalanta's best defender. And it wasn't too late into the second half. Rashford made it 2-1, 53rd minute. And then again, you kind of felt the momentum building. Manchester United having the home crowd, obviously, to back them. And then 75th minute, Harry Maguire makes it 2-2. And then Paulo's favorite, Cristiano Ronaldo, makes it 3-2 in the 81st minute. It was a great header, but I have to back it up even further and give credit to Luke Shaw for putting in a fantastic cross. Again, he kind of whips it around three Atalanta defenders and sort of puts it on a spot where he knows his striker is going to go up and get it. So very unfortunate for Atalanta. I think, you know, them taking that 2-0 lead into halftime, they're at that point, they're not overconfident, but confident that they can come away with at least a point, and to leave with none is difficult. But obviously they still get Manchester United again at home. So hopefully they can come away with a point or three on the match day four there.
Yeah. And hopefully Solskjaer is still there and doesn't get sacked.
So yes, we'll see how that goes.
Again, anyway, quick sidebar, Conte is now rumored to take over, but I highly doubt it. Never in his career has he taken over a club midway through the season, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, but think of the money.
Yeah, a lot of money. A lot of money.
Yeah. Okay, the last matchup of the Champions League for Italian teams last week was Juventus-Zenit, and if anyone asked me going into it what the score was going to be, I'd probably say this. Paulo, what happened?
So Juventus traveled to St. Petersburg to play Zenit St. Petersburg. So again, it was, But the thing is that Juventus actually had most of the possession that game and probably created the better opportunities. It was actually Zenit who was doing most of the defending, and just by the reaction after the Kulusevski goal, 5-10 minutes from time, which was a nice cross from DeCilio, who wasn't even supposed to start this game. And it was a great header from Kulusevski to finish it. It was just a sense of relief. But the thing is that I think Allegri would have accepted a draw going to play in St. Petersburg as well. But the thing is, obviously, a win is 3 points is better. Now you're essentially top of the group because you beat Chelsea, and which, you know, it gives you that cushion for when you have to play Chelsea for the second time. So it was, as Michael, as you pointed out with your sound effects, it was a Cavallo o Cavallo type of performance. And I think it was the 4th straight 1-0 result before the Derby d'Italia. So again, this don't know if you remember, Michael, we were talking about how Allegri can change that mentality from last season. This is where Pirlo's mental strength would have failed him, or the team's mental strength that he would impart to them would have failed him. I think that if this was a game where Pirlo was still in charge, it would be 0-0. But again, Allegri has that extra something that could, you know, draw his team and push him over the limit. And I got approved it here. And you know, like I keep mentioning, 10 games. I think Juventus have played over 10 games so far in all competitions. So I think by the time January comes, I think we'll see Allegri vaulting Juventus back into the title picture, and also into the second round of the Champions League.
Yeah, and that'll also be contingent on what they can manage in the January transfer window. Beyond that, right? If title contention is in the cards for them, but again, that's for another episode in a couple months.
I'd say. So just to kind of segue to our next episode for Champions League, when we discuss it, Juventus now plays Zenit at home. So again, now, you know, Juventus are the overwhelming favorites, in my opinion, to come away with a win.
Yeah, there you have it. Yeah. Alrighty. Well, again, that was the Champions League. So moving on here, we had, of course, the Europa League. So Lazio ends up tying Marseille 0-0. So yeah, not too much to get into that, was it? Or
Immobile missed sitters. Yeah, so I think it was a missed chance for missed opportunity for Lazio to come away with a win in that game. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm just checking the tables here. Where are they, Lazio? In their group, they're second right now. So, again, with Marseille close behind with 3 points, they have 4 points, and Galatasaray have 7 points.
And to qualify directly into the next round, you have to finish first in the group in the Europa League now.
Right. Otherwise, there's a playoff.
Yes, with the with
third
the,
place Champions League teams.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. There you go.
All right. So the next game in the Europa League was Napoli Legia.
Yeah.
So this game took until the 76th minute to find a breakthrough. Even though Napoli was dominating the game, Insigne with the worldly goal. You know, like a one-time volley. I think if we had a goal of the European midweek, this would have been it. And it was his first goal in European competition at home in since December 2018. So then Napoli took a 2-0 lead with Osimhen in the 80th minute, and then rounded out the score with Politano in the 95th minute, which was an important win for Napoli because they lost last match day against Spartak Moscow. So I think they have 4 points so far.
Yeah, correct. So they're on four. They're currently in second above Leicester, but who are also tied at 4 points.
Yeah. So again, and now they play Legia again, and Spartak have to have a difficult game against Leicester have a difficult game against Spartak again.
Okay, well, that's the Europa League, and finally, Europe's best
club competition. and this game proved it, right, Michael?
Yeah, and you know what? We asked the question on when was it, Thursday? We said, obviously, Roma were facing off against Bodo Glimt at the Aspirma Stadion in Norway, where it will be 2 degrees Celsius with a chance of snow showers at kickoff. But can they do it at Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton as a joke, you know, on a late November evening at sub-zero temperatures? Well, it turns out that Roma could not even do it in the 2 degrees Celsius weather in Norway, because Bodo Glimt come away with a thrashing of Roma. It ends 6-1. There's goals in the 8th and the 20th before Roma make it 2-1. But then again, it's there's just too much quality for Roma, as in the second half, Bodo scores 4 goals to, again, just shut down this Roma side completely. So again, it ends 6-1. After the game, Mourinho was very upset and was firing on all cylinders, firing at his player specifically, saying, you know, what do you say? Like, we should have been left at home, these guys, et cetera. It was not pretty.
Yeah, I mean, it pretty much threw Kumbula, Reynolds, Diawara, Villar, and Bora Mallaral under the bus and said, and pretty much told the reporters, like, now you know why.
I play the same players.
I play the same players. And he said after the Napoli game, that starting 11 against Napoli will be the starting 11 in the next game against Cagliari.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it wasn't pretty. For Roma's.
Honestly, sometimes he does it on purpose. In a way, like he has his own mind games, and I think this game was to show to the Freakins that they need to invest in buying quality players in January.
Yeah.
Or else they won't be able to sustain that, in my opinion, quote unquote Scudetto push. We'll see, but top four push in all reality. But I said Scudetto at the beginning of the season. We'll see if I'm still right.
I would agree, Paul. I think it's a shout to the ownership to bring depth in January. But I think Mourinho also realizes, you know, he's not at Madrid, he's not at Manchester United. They're not going to be able to spend, I'm talking about Roma now and the Freakins, they're not going to spend 100 million euros in January to reinforce a squad like some of Mourinho's previous clubs could do. So I think at the same time his press conference was a shout to the ownership group, I think it was also a challenge to those guys who did play against Bodo to say, I don't think you're good enough right now. You need to show me that you are good enough, that you do deserve to start or that you do deserve to come off the bench. And, you know, some players, you know, it's going to light a fire under their ass and they're going to start to perform better. And others might just continue to decline and that might, you know, see them being shipped out in January on loan or a transfer. So I think he's trying to do two things with what he said in that last press conference.
Yeah, in either case, he's getting what he wants because he's finding out which exactly. players are tough enough to kind of push through, right?
Yep.
Just 2 points before we move on, Michael. I read today that Kumbula may leave in January. I know, so Udinese is interested. And then on the money point, I read that the Freakins will invest 400 million euros in capital into the club for the following fiscal year.
Good. They're gonna freaking invest. Anyways, let's. That was a bad pun. Let's move forward here. Again, Bodo top their group right now with 7 points. Roma on 6 points. So again, that the loss may prove devastating in terms of what's going to happen. Because again, there's somewhere something else. There's, you know, some groups or some teams go ahead to the. Right ahead, and the other teams, I guess, second place would go on to the playoffs to move forward. So, again, it'll be an interesting set of matches for Roma in Europe to follow. Okay, that's the European roundup. Great job, everybody. Now, of course, we're going to get into Chris's favorite segment. Chris?
Yes, I'm ready for it. So, I do have to thank, I think it's Joe Fischetti. Paulo, is that correct?
Yes.
Joe rightfully pointed out an error in last week's hint where I gave the guys the hint that Caprari had only played in Champions League, but my sources were incorrect and he had played in Europa League. So I'm sure, guys, that's why you got it wrong last week.
That's
right?
Well, that's what I was going to say.
That was the hint. That was just. So I'm still not giving you the win for last week, though.
We'll call it a draw.
We'll call it a draw. I'll get back to you. we'll get going with the hints for this week. Or did we want to discuss our question from last week's winner? What do we want to do first?
Paulo?
Might as well discuss, and then we'll get into the new one.
Yeah, let's do that.
Paul, I'll let you introduce the question.
So it was
or the topic.
Actually, first I should play this just to get out of the way. Hold on, wait. Here, hold on. Here it comes, and there we go.
Who am I? I don't know.
There you go, Paul.
All right.
So it's from a good friend of the show. He asked, should Destro be sold in the January transfer window, or be kept at Genoa to fight off the relegation race?
I guess for me, I mean,
so before you answer, his contract expires June 30th, 2022. Go ahead.
In the summer.
This June.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's a couple of little things I would need to know before I, you know, really answer that. The biggest part is, you know, where is Genoa in the table at that time, right? I mean, 18th right now. So if we just kind of project and say, you know, Genoa's in, you know, 17th, 18th, 19th come January, it depends what you can get for him. I don't know how much a club is willing to pay for Destro. I know he's had these streaky moments where he's putting in a goal every week or sometimes two goals a week, but I don't know. I'm going to go out on a limb and just say no. I think there are a lot of variables at play here, but I would say no to it, just to answer the question like that.
Michael?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't see it happening, but I just don't see it on, because I don't see the demand for Destro. Like, I don't think anyone is going to go out and be like, oh yeah, we need to get this guy to push us over the edge. But that might be what Genoa ends up needing to, again, push themselves out of the relegation zone. So again, I just don't see it happening because I guess two factors are, Genoa would probably need him, and I don't see anyone else wanting him.
Okay, so
for the fee that Genoa would
exactly would request. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, the thing is that the fee will be minimal because his contract is up in the summer.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, it'll be lower than it would be if he had a longer contract. But if he's in good form, and you know, Genoa know there are, you know, Serie A clubs that are in need of a striker, it'll be low. But I'm sure they'll, you know, try to increase it if they know teams are desperate for a player of his profile. So it's kind of a cat and mouse game, I think, at that point.
Yeah, let's be honest here. He's no Alessandro Matri.
Julian, what do you think?
I agree with the other guys. I don't, honestly, I know he's had a good start to the season, but I don't see a team spending any money on him, quite frankly. And I think Genoa, it'll be more beneficial for them to hang on to him to try and fight the relegation battle.
Yeah.
Okay, so all of you guys mentioned, you know, keeping him to fight the relegation battle. So I'll take a different tact and say that probably personally, it most likely will be beneficial to Destro's career to stay at Genoa, because, you know, we posted on Twitter yesterday that, you know, there was a sign saying that, you know, that if you want to win the World Cup, Destro in the national team, you know, if he continues to score to a ratio of a goal per appearance and has the most headed goals in Europe, there's no choice that Mancini has but to consider him for the next international squad.
And if he can score a goal or two goals for the national team, he's already better than Immobile.
that's right, Michael. And you know, we posted this yesterday, and today, this morning, there was an article saying that Destro is quoted saying that the national team is one of his objectives this season. You know, we started the campaign somewhat as a joke, right? You know, we didn't think it was going to be possible that we'll have Mattia Destro entered into the talk of having him on the Italy squad for the World Cup. But, you know, game after game, he starts, you know, proving us wrong. And we were half joking, you know what I mean? Like, it was a kind of a jinx type of goofo type of mentality. But, like, if we have an alternative to Immobile, who is the same age as him, actually a bit older, I'll take Destro if he continues to stay healthy and to score in Serie A. It'd be the same thing like Caputo if he didn't get injured for the Euros. Chris, yeah. you sound like you want something to say.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, we're kind of maybe getting off topic a bit. I mean, yes, if Destro keeps up his form, I think it's hard to argue that that Destro shouldn't be in there over Immobile, because Immobile has had enough games. He's had a tournament and then some to prove himself. And, you know, as I think we'd all agree, he hasn't been able to do that. So I think if Destro does get called in, then, you know, an opportunity will be there for him to take that starting spot. But I think he has to keep up this blistering pace, which I don't think he's capable of. But, you know, we'll see. Like you said, it started as a joke, but here we are, we're still talking about it. So anything could happen.
Yeah. And keep in mind, he's two off of Immobile, off pace for Immobile for the capital this season so far. So, I mean, Immobile is getting it done, as he has been getting done over the past couple seasons domestically. But again, just we've seen how inept he is aside from that. But
yeah. So before we get to the question, 17 goals in the last season in a quarter for Destro.
Right. And I mean, how many have Immobile, how many has Immobile had in the same time?
Help me out here. How many goals did Immobile have? Like 20 last season in Serie A?
Yeah, something like that. So again, it's still it's like Chris said, it's going to depend on his form, etc. It's lots of mitigating circumstances here.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, move on. Yeah. Let's go on to Chris.
All right. So we'll move on to the hints for this week.
Yeah.
So hint number one: his first stint in Serie A was from 2010 to 2012, all with the same club, and he has only been with two Serie A clubs to date. Hint number two, he has played in both the Champions League and Europa League, but not with a Serie A club. Hint number three, this midfielder has over 50 caps for his country, but his last appearance was in 2015. So I'll go back to the beginning. Hint number one, his first stint in Serie A was from 2010 to 2012, all with the same club, and he's only been with two Serie A clubs. Hint number two, he has played in both the Champions League and Europa League, but not with a Serie A club. And then hint number three, this midfielder has over 50 caps for his country, but his last appearance was in 2015. 5 minute timer is starting.
Okay. Well, okay. Wow. So midfielder, and last played in 2015
for his country.
For his country. So we're talking about probably a mid 30 midfielder.
Yes.
Yeah. Roughly, like over
30. Or just someone who fell out of form, I guess. Yeah. And has been able to make it back. And has over 50 caps, Chris, you said?
For his country, yep.
Yeah. So would have been pretty prominent back then.
Are we allowed to ask questions here? Like, what's going on here?
Well, yeah, so a reminder for all of the listeners, the guys can ask a question, which I can refuse to answer, or they can ask the bonus hint, which is sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit.
Okay, is this midfielder a European?
Yes.
Okay. So it narrows it down a bit.
And okay, sorry, I knew the answer. I was just trying to think of whether I wanted to.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and he played out in European competitions, club competitions outside of Serie A.
Yeah, so he played in the Champions League and Europa League, but when he was in that competition, he was not with a Serie A club.
Okay, so it's either Soriano.
But has Soriano played 50 caps?
Oh, yeah. Good point.
I was even thinking like, I don't know, like Zappa Costa or something, but.
But wait, 50 caps for his national team?
Yeah.
Yep.
I was going to say Nainggolan, but that doesn't make any sense because he played with Roma.
3 minutes left.
Yeah, he was on three teams and never anywhere else.
Yeah.
Okay. So
can't be Godin, and he's not a European.
He's a midfielder.
Midfielder.
A midfielder, yeah.
again, first stint in Serie A was from 2010 to 2012, all with the same club. And he's only been with two Serie A clubs. He's played in Champions League and Europa League, but not with a Serie A club. And then this midfielder, who we've also added, is a European, has over 50 caps for his country, and his last appearance was for his country was in 2015.
Does that include this season, Chris?
What's that? Sorry.
The Champions League and Europa League stuff?
Yes. Yeah.
Medel?
European.
Oh, God damn it, right, European.
2 minutes left. You do, I will give you access to the bonus hint.
Yes. Yeah, we'll take it, yeah.
Or you could ask another question. That's the amendment for tonight. You can ask another question or you can take the bonus hint.
Okay, so here's what I'm thinking, guys. We know that it can't be someone, I guess they would have had to not have featured, I guess, in Europe so far this season, except if it was Roma, because that's not Champions League or Europa League. So we know it's none of the top four teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And not Roma, or maybe Roma. So does that help us at all?
Ribery.
Ribery. No, he was in Serie A before.
From 2010 to 2012.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Damn it. Okay, I guess the bonus hit then.
Bonus hint?
Yeah. What do you all think? Right. You guys agree?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, so the bonus hint. This player, one of his family members is part of the senior management group for a Serie A club.
Family members.
This player, one of his family members is part of the senior management group for a Serie A club. 30 seconds.
Oh, man.
Any guesses?
God.
10 seconds.
Yeah.
Five.
Yeah. I don't even have an idea this time.
Boga.
All right. So I want to see if you guys can get it now. So you're wrong, obviously, because there's no guesses. So I win again. Yeah. I just got to make sure we're clear.
You didn't win last week, though.
So this player is Portuguese. So again, Portuguese midfielder.
Oh, Miguel Veloso.
Hey. And then who's the family member, Paulo? That's, I don't know if you guys know this.
No, I don't.
Do you know who he's married to?
No.
Preziosi's daughter.
You bastard.
See. So yes, it's Miguel Veloso of Verona. So his first stint, I have to go back. I think it was with Genoa the first time around.
Yeah.
And so he played in Champions League and Europa League with Sporting Lisbon / Dynamo Kiev, maybe one of the top Ukrainian clubs, and then of course his caps were for Portugal and hasn't been with them since 2015.
Right.
So yes.
So in theory, he's only played for two Serie A clubs because it was
Genoa,
and then Genoa again, and then Verona.
That's what he said.
Yeah, that was the part of the first hint. He's only been with two Serie A clubs. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was a good one. Yeah, he was not even.
That was good. That was good. That was a good one, Chris.
I had to redeem myself.
Hey, well, let's see if the listeners can get it. That's going to be a very who knows? Maybe they'll get it right away, and then
first guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, of course, that was. This has been. Who am I? I don't know.
Who am I? I don't know.
And we truly did not know this time. All right, Paulo. Take away with the Serie B minutes.
All right. So last round, there was a couple of interesting results. Monza beating Cittadella 1-0. Tirana beat Vicenza 5-0. Frosinone beat Ascoli 2-1. Brescia beat Cremonese 1-0. And Gianluigi Buffon's Parma lost 2-1 to Regina. So the Serie B table is as follows, the abridged Serie B table. Pisa up top with 20 points. Brescia second with 17, followed by Benevento, Lecce, Cremonese, Regina, all with 16. Frosinone and Perugia round out the top eight with 14 points. Como fifth from bottom with 10 points. Crotone with 7 points. Alessandria with 7 points. Vicenza 3 points. Pordenone 2 points. And a quick Pescara Calcio update. They tied Siena 1-1, and Pescara sit in eighth place with 17 points, but it's a very, very tight league in Lega Pro Group B. Michael.
There we have it. All right. That's going to be the show for us, guys. Does anybody have any last-minute things to bring up?
I was thinking, can we do like a classic player at some point? Just like, you know, throwing around, change it up.
Somebody who's retired?
Yeah.
I can look into it. I'll have to maybe revisit how I do my hints.
But, yeah, study the rules, et cetera.
Yeah.
I think Paulo's the only one who's going to get the...
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody who played when we were still maybe at least born. Cause,
yeah.
Well, yeah.
Okay, that's fine. I'll accept that.
Yeah, we can... I can definitely look into that. And I think I meant... This is completely different, but you mentioned Como. I think I'm... mentioned this a couple weeks ago, but for anybody who has DAZN, there's a, like I said, it's a 4 or 5 part kind of mini series that they do on Como, and it stopped short, I believe, because of when COVID hit, but it's really well done in my opinion. So yeah, I recommend if you have a couple of hours to spare, just crush all 4 or 5 episodes in a row. It's well done
for sure. Julian.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add, to be honest.
Okay, Paul.
I'm looking forward to 2 rounds of
Serie A. Yes, you stole mine. Rounds. That's right. I was going to say, again, don't forget, we have, again, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, no Friday, but we have, of course, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
And then
Tuesday, Wednesday, yeah. Thursday.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I think the following week, there may be soccer on or Calcio on every single day of the week.
Football.
Love it. Love it.
And then, unfortunately, international break following that.
Yeah, of course. Of course. An important international break. But again, we'll get to that when we get to it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then with that, again, enjoy the football this week. And when we're back, I guess, next week, we'll have, of course, a much muddier table, I think, than we have this week, because the midweek games seem to throw wrenches all the time. So again, we'll see what happens this Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, followed by Saturday, Sunday, Monday. All right, so with that, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll be back next week. So until then, bye.